Yesterday night, they asked me kindly if I could actually step in instead of Rainer. They said, oh, thank you very much. You said, yes, and I, well, you know, you just wait until I give the presentation. You're still so thankful. I think it's very nice to come up and be kind of one of the last speakers, and I really appreciate they're still here. Many of the things that I'm going to be saying somehow have been mentioned before. I think it has been extremely interesting presentations. But of course, you know, I have my own take on things, right? So basically, what I'm going to be doing now is that I'm going to propose four suggestions when we are talking about innovation policy for transformation, for transformative change. And those four suggestions are going to be based as much on some kind of normative kind of considerations from my side, but also based on some observations of current gaps of knowledge that we have. So it's also a call for us in the academia to kind of, you know, be much more focusing on a certain number of items, or specifically four items that need to be kind of much more analyzed. So if I kind of, you know, of course, you know, we need to, I was asked to answer the question about basically, you know, to cope with grand social challenges often implies overcoming system lock-ins, how these can be incentivized, initiated, or orchestrated, and then which role do agencies and their interactions actually have to do. So this actually was the main question that I was trying to kind of answer, and in that answer, I'm going to kind of propose those four aspects. So let me start kind of very briefly about kind of, you know, much more approach about problem-oriented innovation policy. I don't think I need to go much more in detail. I think Matthias was also talking very much about the need to kind of, you know, address problems, which are not only economic and growth, but also complex problems in society. So what kind of, you know, so we need to kind of have this kind of more policy approach about kind of policy. And then this actually, the book that is actually mentioning that is actually soon coming out is actually much more also problem-oriented. So what are my four suggestions? That is actually what I want to say. Well, I mean, first of all, I think that we need to kind of focus on transformation as an organizational change. I think that in many cases, we are still talking too much disregarding this intra-organizational and inter-organizational transformation. I think we need to kind of understand what's going on, you know, with the agents of change. Who are they really? And what is actually happening with them? And how can we kind of try to empower them? Can we give them some kind of, you know, capacities, as we will talk a little bit later? Then I think that we have to kind of understand when and how different areas of innovation work together. And then we will actually also, in order to be able to bring them closer to each other, I will talk about a little bit. And then the fourth suggestion is actually that we need to contextualize the role of the state. And I will propose something slightly different than has been said before, but which is actually going to be much more on a, let's say, socio-technical systems approach. So those are my four kind of, you know, suggestions, and I'll go just one by one on each of them. So when we focus on systemic transformation as organizational change, what does it actually mean? Let me take one or even two steps back and call in kind of any psychologist and also organizational studies. When people want to quit smoking, it's very simple. You just go and stop smoking. It's as simple as that. You just one day decide, I want to quit. But it is not as simple as it seems. And why is that? It is because why are we locked in some specific patterns of behavior? Because human beings like routines. We are essentially routine lovers. We just, you know, if you have a child, you know that routine creates harmony, creates kind of well feelings, expectations, you know what to expect, things are actually coming, it gives harmony. In visual arts, one of the most powerful things you might have is a series of photographs that actually give you a rhythm. It is actually tiny variations of the same thing, creates harmony. So we humans are, our kind of, you know, psychology is actually totally focused towards routine. And this actually happens also within organizations, right? Even in most kind of, you know, basic social units as a family. But also in large and complex organizations, routines are really ruling the world. So to change anything is actually quite a, you know, quite an overcoming, right? More than you will actually believe. So if we take from that, what I would like to also to focus on is that we have a lot of gaps in our understanding of systemic change, social systemic change. And I think that when I'm listening this morning, my thinking is that we have a lot of focus about knowledge, knowledge production, knowledge accumulation, knowledge complementarities, relatedness or unrelatedness, but everything is about knowledge, right? And of course, that is absolutely essential if we are talking about transformation, because we need that kind of change, that knowledge. But we have far too little understanding or analysis about transformation as kind of, you know, vertical and horizontal forms of diffusion or generalization, or kind of, you know, kind of scale up. And here is all about, you know, vertical, but also as much as horizontal. So we know far too little, and I would like to also to call a little bit in what was actually said this morning about this ambidexterity. And I think that we are essentially very unbalanced these days. We know a lot about experimentation, and, you know, and we know a lot about, you know, exploration phase, but we know so little about the exploitation of that knowledge. We know so little about when that knowledge is actually put to work. So I think that we need to kind of, you know, understand that in order to be able to overcome those natural lock-ins that happen in any type of social organization. I think that also is kind of quite important because there is an assumption that, you know, that kind of exploitation happens automatically through the market. But, you know, in context where there is not the case, you know, I would like to also take also some kind of remarks this morning about Giovanni Dossi saying that we need to take this kind of institutional embeddedness much more seriously. And that is actually, in my understanding, precisely to understand that process of the exploitation or the kind of the dissemination. The next point that I want to make is that we have tremendous gaps in our knowledge about diffusion. We have many theories of diffusion. You know, we have really a lot of different kind of understandings. And here, of course, the most important ones, the most kind of significant ones, are basically strategic management literature and transition theory literature, right? But there's a fundamental gap in that literature, which is that it is still very much kind of, you know, object artifact based, is not so much taking into account the digital, you know, digital transformations. So all this issue of, you know, taking into consideration the diffusion of in a digital age is absolutely essential. And why is that the case? Because in the digital era, the time lapse of change is extremely quick. And so in a way, that kind of, you know, the theories that we have, they take into account a very kind of much longer process that it actually might happen through this kind of, you know, interoperability of this technology. And also the scalability of it is actually tremendous. So this time lapse and the scalability together with the winner takes it all is actually some very important dimensions that are not taken into consideration in the current literatures of diffusion. And so I think that we might take that kind of, you know, very much into account. Now, how that actually works with a social kind of, you know, context where some kind of changes are quicker and some other changes are extremely fast. That is actually something that we need to understand. And then also the third gap in our knowledge, which has to do with organizational change in the systemic transformation, is that we need far more knowledge about processes of discontinuation. I think one of my favorite readings is from Stefan's work on that kind of, you know, how socio-technical systems can be governed in towards discontinuation. And I think that is actually a very much path-breaking type of analysis that I would like to see much more of it. Because if we are going to understand that transformation, we also need to understand how to govern the phasing out of socio-technical systems that we don't like. And I think that we need to understand this phasing in and phasing out as two kind of paths of the same transformation, and that we need much, much more to be done. So this is the first of the four gaps. Then I think that we need to kind of understand who are the agents of change, and we need also to understand how they work, and we need that in order to be able to basically empower them to kind of foster that change much more quicker. So we traditionally in our economic literature, we're dealing with firms and public research organizations and universities as those are kind of, you know, knowledge producers, as those who are actually the actual kind of, you know, agents of change, typically through the production of knowledge and embedded that knowledge and using that knowledge in the market. But I think that we need to consider that there are absolutely super important new agents of change that have to that are related to social innovation and that are related to public sector innovation. And I've heard a little bit too little about those two types of innovation this morning. So the actors here are basically tertiary sector, which is actually a very diverse sector, by the way. We have civil society, which is organized through different, very differentiated, you know, types of civil organizations. And we have non-profit private organizations like philanthropies that are actually quite an important game changers in some situations. Just like take the Bill Gates Foundation is actually a true game changer in when it comes to global health. And I think that we have so far and been working far too little on those agents of change. So we need to kind of, you know, understand that our innovation policies have so far been focusing far too much in firms, and perhaps we're kind of, you know, getting now into this impact agenda that we want to kind of bring in the final users, right? But they typically come as stakeholders, final users, through that those are going to be the ones actually who are going to receive the impact, right? And I think that we need to kind of think much more broadly on that, and we need to kind of, you know, improve the capacity of transformative change of those kind of, you know, other actors actively engaged in these innovation policies, right? So they have to be empowered in a much more encompassing way. Then I think the third aspect, I think that who is going to provide this kind of change, and here I think it was actually quite lovely to hear Matthias to talk about, you know, to warn us about the disparity between the high level of ambition on the one hand about, you know, we're going to change the world, right? And on the other hand, this kind of, you know, the limited capacity of a very important agents of change, which is actually the innovation agencies, right? That actually make very important decisions about allocation of resources, but also about all sorts of different kind of incentive mechanisms. So here, I think I would like to kind of, you know, rely very much on literature of political science that have been working extensively on basically public administration, the capacity of public administration in terms of problem solving. And we are actually reflecting upon five types of capacity that need to be kind of analyzed but also kind of improved. One has to do with the analytical capacity of those agencies in order to be able to identify complex problems. And here, of course, we are on the pathway, which is not really kind of bringing solutions in front of, you know, we are not in a garbage can of March, James March, but also we are thinking about the true, real problems of society. So in that sense, we need to kind of enhance, you know, understand what analytical capacities those agencies have right now, how are they actually using that analytical capacity, and whether that analytical capacity is actually really geared towards the kind of, you know, identifying and analyzing and providing diagnosis to this kind of, you know, a whole new world of complex problems. Then we need to consider the capacity to deliver those solutions in terms of, do they have enough kind of, you know, deliverance in terms of the type of instrumentation, the type of combination of those instrumentation, the type of design of that instrumentation. Then capacity of coordination, of course, that is actually related to the silo discussions that we just had, but also kind of, you know, who is coordinating. And there are many different types of coordination. There are different types, you know, we have a whole world of literature in, you know, in public policy, in public administration about different types of coordination. So there's not only one coordination, there are different types of coordination. And what is actually the one that actually would work better in some specific situations? Regulatory capacity. I think that here is not only a type of regulatory impact assessment, right, but in very much ways of having creating spaces for regulatory experimentation, and also be able to move much quicker and much more boldly into not just, you know, picking up the pieces when they are broken, but very much kind of, you know, into advanced, you know, anticipatory regulatory spaces. And then, of course, finally, reflexive capacity. We don't want to be, you know, kind of technocrats. There has to be a very strong kind of capacity to reflect upon the implications, and here, enhancing the democratic dimensions of thinking out of the box. But we need to think as well to the fourth will be kind of, you know, a building. Capacities not only in innovation agencies, but also in the tertiary sector. I think that the world of philanthropies is making a whole kind of, there are really these days into a very dramatic changes. Very few years ago, we had philanthropies that were just kind of, you know, donors. They were happily giving money. I am so rich and I'm so good, I just give you money, I trust you, do whatever you want with that money. Philanthropies are changing radically these days. They have a true kind of, you know, come to age. They are much more project management oriented. They're much more catalytic. They're much more kind of impact oriented as well. So that idea, that world that I give you money, you know, do whatever you want with it, is completely gone. It's much more kind of, you know, changing. At the same time, they're becoming increasingly professionalized, but they are not there yet. There's a lot of, you know, lack of professionalism in that management. So there's, again, a huge gap between their capacities and the real kind of, you know, expectations about themselves. And then they are orphan money. They have, they're not really accountable to anyone. And so they sometimes say, well, we are accountable to the society, but they are really kind of, you know, they are really operating in a void. And that gives them sometimes a really kind of very cold feet to think about who are they actually they're responsible to. So that kind of transition of who they are is actually quite to be quite very important. And then my third kind of notion or kind of, you know, suggestion, we want to avoid this kind of technocratic kind of, you know, organization. So the way of avoiding that is to bring the three areas of innovation together. I think that in kind of new kind of instruments and mixes. We have the techno-industrial innovation as the way we understand that today. So it's kind of, you know, scientific and technical for kind of market and for kind of, you know, industrial competitiveness. We have as well social innovation. And we have, you know, it's a kind of, you know, much more bottom-up. It's actually driven by the civil society. And then we have also public sector innovation, which is actually all this experimentation. And I, you know, I can tell you, as you know that better than me, there's so much experimentation going on right now within the world of social innovation and within also the public sector. Huge amount of experimentation. I did recently a survey about in 19 different countries, how many policy labs do they have? And I had already 168, just counting them. But they have a very short life. They don't live very long time. So there's a lot of public sector experimentation. And if you go to Denmark, you know, also everyone is talking about, you know, innovation units. We have innovation units in different ministries. We have innovation units in hospitals. We have innovation units at level of cities. There's a lot of public sector innovation. And altogether, they need to be brought together into kind of providing transformative innovation. So I think that sometimes our innovation policies are far too much still on the techno-industrial innovation and far too little on the other two types of innovation. So we would need to kind of find ways to bring them together in a much more solid way. And of course, you know, we need to understand that we need to contextualize the role of the state. The state is not all-powerful. Sometimes, you know, people think, oh, okay, the state could actually manage that, but it has very important lacuna and very important limits, right? And we don't want the state to be there everywhere either. So many of the roles of the state are highly dependent on the type of socio-technical systems we're talking about. And here I have this kind of, you know, four pictures for you. We have basically... We have this is actually cryptocurrencies. They are created in a total kind of institutional void. There's is a non-regulation at all. Either you have, you know, many countries are, you know, in many countries are not regulated. Some few countries have, prohibited them, but, you know, they're operating a total vacuum. And the state is going to be kind of finding and picking up the pieces when we have many people losing a lot of money. We have here basically smart cities. These are highly based into public and private partnerships. So this is actually in a lot of kind of experimentation going on there and co-creation of knowledge between, you know, especially strong cities. There's a lot of learning across different cities. And here the state has a different, completely different type of role here. Nuclear energy, both to promote them. In some countries are still promoting it very much. In some countries are like in Germany, it's actually going phasing out. But the role of the state has completely different role than here, right? And automated vehicles, you know, self-driving vehicles. This is actually a very fun and nice guy, but basically this is actually where regulators have absolutely no clue how to go about it. And I was talking to the Swedish Transport Agency, and they are really kind of in a mood of total experimentation. They still don't know exactly, and this is very much kind of related to the way in which voluntary standards will be set up by whom? By the automotive industry. So this actually very much into a totally different kind of game than we are talking here. So I think that we need to understand that the state has kind of completely different roles according to the type of socio-technical systems we're talking about as well. Yes, thank you very much.